Hey, Fish Tank family, let's keep it real. Debt can hit hard and it doesn't care who you are, but you don't have to face it alone. I've seen people struggle and I've seen what a second chance can do.
That's facts, Juice. And when it comes to getting folks out from under it, nobody does it better than Van Horn Law Group. Chad and his team don't just talk the talk. They show up and fight for people when they need it most.
Yeah, I've known Chad Van Horn for over a decade. He's a good friend. And more importantly, I've seen firsthand the real results he and his team deliver for people all over Florida. Bankruptcy, debt relief, whatever it takes to help you breathe again.
Over 10,000 people have gotten a fresh start thanks to Van Horn Law Group. No judgment, just real solutions.
Yeah, so if debt is holding you back, call Van Horn Law Group at 954-637-0000 or visit vanhornlawgroup.com for a free consultation.
And if you mention the Fish Tank, they'll even cover the cost of pulling your credit report so you know exactly where you stand.
That's right. Don't wait. Take control and get back in the game with Van Horn Law Group.
Hey, Fish Tank listeners, Alvaro Freitas here, CEO of Casabella Design Group and host of the Renovation Revolution podcast. Look, every great football team needs a quarterback, someone who reads the field, calls the play, and leads the drive. That's what I do on your renovation, from kickoff to the final whistle. Whether you're dreaming about a bathroom upgrade, building that bonus room for your just one more week brother-in-law, or teaching you how not to be that pain in the ass client, we cover it all. This is an HGTV flop. It's real talk from a contractor who's been in the dust, the drama, and the demo. So grab a cold brew or un cafecito if that's more of your vibe and join me for the renovation revolution wherever you get this podcast. Follow the show and I'll see you in the huddle.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Trap OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
There it is, the greatest intro in all of Miami Dolphins podcasting. You're watching Fish Tank Live, presented by Van Horn Law Group and Casabella Design Group. I am Seth Levitt. I'm live here at the Casabella Design Group studios. And typically, I would be joined by the man with the best hands in the podcast business. But we don't know where OJ McDuffie is. We're sending a search party out for him. Jeff Darlington in the house from ESPN. And Jeff, when you show up, you never know what might happen.
That's right. You might want to check the local jail. Make sure that OJ didn't get.
Quite a reputation.
That's nothing. Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing against OJ McDuffie.
Fortunately for OJ, it's not his reputation that we're talking about.
Right.
All about to be clear about that one.
That's exactly right. And of course, we've got the legendary Savak, our great producer here, and Chris Perkins in the house on another slow Miami Dolphins offseason. So excited to talk about a lot of things. Biggest news of the day, I think, is that Jakeem Grant announced his retirement. We love Jakeem. I can't remember the last time Jakeem played in an NFL game, but he is officially retired. So just make sure we discuss that. Jeff, I don't know if you have any breaking news as it relates to that.
Sure don't, Seth. I sure don't.
Too good. Too good.
Maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Great
check
time.
The Wikipedia page. No, all due respect.
Yeah, I love Jakeem. He's a great guest on the show and everything else.
He's a good player.
All kidding aside, there is a lot to talk about here with our Miami Dolphins. One way or another, they find a way to be one of the bright, shiny objects in free agency or pre-free agency or whatever you want, legal tampering or all the right. different things that we talk about in the National Football League. And I want to get into all that stuff, and I know we've got only a little bit of your time tonight, Jeff. But I have to ask you first and foremost what it was like for you and Chris Perkins to be on the same Miami Dolphins beat. I need to know about that crossover because it had to be legendary.
It was brief, but it was a bright light because it was after years of just competitive, like people just crushing each other's souls. And then you had Perk come in and all of a sudden it was like, you know, who can hate Perk, you know?
Right.
light up the room. And, it made things a lot more amicable in the room. Well, we had some great times in those competitive days, and not to say Perk doesn't compete, but you know, it's just tough to have a bad day when Perk's around.
You know what? There are many of my ex-girlfriends that would disagree with that statement, yeah. but I appreciate it. I appreciate the spirit that was sent. Thank you. Great times back in those days, man. Great times.
Many of those days when, you know, these were the days when Jeff Darlington was the king of Beach Place. And Perk.
Oh, no, come on. I was over a Blue Martini with OJ.
Okay, my bad.
Which I think I heard recently shut down, actually.
Really?
Which I wish OJ was here to confirm that, but I don't know if that's true. I don't want to hurt a business if it's still open, but
right.
Those were the days, man.
Well, if it is true, or you're creating an issue that could hurt the business, maybe that'll drive people to go over there and
get things going.
But speaking of business, let's talk about the business of the National Football League. And I guess we start where we always seem to start, and that's at the quarterback position. And you know, I think the Dolphins were probably the loudest in the situation. It was inevitable. We spent a lot of time talking about Tua earlier in the week. Chris Perkins said it was the end of the most disappointing era in Miami Dolphins football history. So absolutely. I want to get some feedback on that. But with Tua being released, Tua's now going to Atlanta, left-handed Atlanta. And then the Miami Dolphins, there was speculation throughout the entire offseason that the Dolphins, you know, it's Green Bay South now, and who knows Malik Willis better than, I guess, the Dolphins in Arizona, right? They both were probably players in that. How do you have any insight as to kind of how that happened and how it happened so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, it was never going to happen if Malik Willis was going to covet the type of market. Some did wonder that he would. But ultimately, I think people did look at his body of work and say, we're not able to take the type of chance that is going to be upwards of, you know, the type of contract that Baker Mayfield signed, for instance, when he went to the Bucs. Baker had at least a body of work that gave you some understanding of what he was. But if there was one team that was going to spend anything remotely close to that, it was going to be the Dolphins, which obviously was a unique circumstance because of the dead money they're taking on with Tua. So to me, I was very interested going into the start of free agency, because if Malik didn't get the money in Miami, I don't know where he was going to get it. So that obviously makes you wonder, who were the Dolphins competing against when it came to his services? The one thing I'll say is, I'm always, you know, I'm an eternal optimist, unlike Perk. I always generally give the benefit of the doubt. And I do think when it comes to a head coach and a GM who came from Green Bay and were around him, at least they can speak to the character of the person, which is going to be an important component to building a new culture. If they couldn't speak to that and they were just going off of a flash in the pan last season with Green Bay, I would be all over this saying, what are they doing? Why would they not just go with Quinn and see what happens? There's no reason to try to invest too much. The fact that they have that understanding, you know, that gives me a little bit more reason to believe that this could be a good decision given the amount of money they spent on him. But I could see both. I could see you taking it either way there. I could see you also saying, what's the point? Like just I'm not saying tank, but take your blows because of what happened with Tua and then figure out quarterback in a year.
Perk, what are your thoughts on that? I know what you feel about the Tua era, but what I haven't got, Sam Marcoux is in the chat, Jeff. Does Travis Wingfield still wear skinny jeans when he crashes on your couch?
Travis Wingfield, with all due respect, has never crashed. Never. He can if he wants to.
Right, if he needs to.
I don't know if they've got a story confused. I mean, a lot of it. Maybe, actually, you know what? Never mind. I probably just forgot myself.
It's just a great alone.
Oh, we're going to leave it alone. The chat is great, by the way. So Perk, we had a running thing on our old platform where, for whatever reason, Perk's internet and our platform wouldn't work. And somebody just said, centrifugal force fixed Perk's internet. So we know what that's in reference to. I don't know. Jeff might spin something today.
Yeah, I can definitely. Well, I don't even know what this is. It's some sort of monitor. But
There we go. There we go, baby. My signal's getting stronger.
There you go. Your signal's getting stronger.
It's like ET phoning home right now. Too good. Too good. So Perk, you just heard what Jeff had to say about that. What are your feelings on the Malik Willis signing? What are they saying? It's like the 22nd or 23rd ranked quarterback contract in the league. Is that, you know, I don't like to get into the numbers. I know it's a lot of money for a guy who hasn't played a whole lot of ball, but where do you stand on it, Perk?
You know, I've written before and I still say I wouldn't have done it. I would have wanted to have seen a bigger body of work from Malik Willis. Having said that, I'm not mad at Sully and Half for doing this because they do know him. They have been with him. It's a good number. And look, you know, Malik doesn't have to. Well, I'll say this. I don't think they're building a system where Malik has to come in and turn into Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes. I think they're building a system where he can be Jalen Hurts or Sam Darnold and they can be effective, meaning you have a team around him. He doesn't have to play hero ball and carry the offense. He just has to make timely plays. And if that's the situation, which I think that it is from listening to Sullivan and Halfley, I'm okay with it. I still wouldn't have done it. I still would have waited until 27 because I think the class is better. But I'm not mad at him for doing it, and I look forward to it. I'm not going to root against Malik Willis by any stretch. He seems like a really good guy. I'm not going to root for his downfall so I can say, yeah, I was right. Good luck to him. It seems like a good plan, but I wouldn't have done it.
That's actually the most better than I expected out of you, Perk.
Told us how he was the happy-go-lucky guy.
Fair and balanced. No, he's happy-go-lucky when he's not talking about the Dolphins.
I got you.
But I agree with that. But I also add this, Perk, is that if you're going to get the quarterback, you've got to get somewhat lucky in the draft if you don't have the first overall pick. Yeah. Or you've got to do what some of these teams have done, like the Seattle Seahawks when it came to Darnold, or the Bucks when it came to Baker Mayfield. Right. You've got to take a shot on a veteran and hope it works out. At least, again, they have the body of knowledge. The only thing I'd say, like, I didn't love Malik Willis at the start of his career. Like, the first few years, it did not feel like this was headed down a good direction. I think there's a lot of unknowns for all of us out there, because if you talk to people that did have him in his first year, they wouldn't be sitting here saying this feels great. But if there are any knowns, again, it's the two people in charge in Miami who would have that understanding. So, like you said, good number, lower risk, and potentially higher reward, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing I'll say is a lot of people are saying, well, that's a lot of money for a guy who started X amount of games, or a guy who only threw 35 passes last year, however many passes. But people have to understand he threw a whole lot more passes in practice than he did in games, and those guys saw every one of them. People have to understand that so much of where we've seen things go wrong, even, you know, here in Miami specifically, is not truly understanding the character of a player, not truly understanding a player's work habits, not truly understanding the way people rally around a player. And these guys at least have that information. And I know I'm just kind of echoing what you guys said, but I think that they made a decision that was, they had information. They had information that not everybody had.
The only thing I'll say to that too is that they probably don't have enough information on Quinn, who, by the way, has, like, I'm not saying he's the answer. There's some body of work that Miami would maybe suggest otherwise, but there was a lot of people excited about his upside too. So, you know, well, I guess he's still in the mix. It's not as if he's not in the mix. It's not like the
cover. Right, I mean, they want competition.
Let me say this about Malik. I've got a column coming out, well, maybe tomorrow, depending on, you know, on if I write something else. But I was researching, you know, Malik has gone four seasons without being a starter, a reserve, and now he's going to be a starter. And I was looking at people that were in that situation, and you've got, like, you know, Jake Delhomme and Jeff Hostetler. I guess Kurt Warner is kind of in that situation. Jimmy Garoppolo in that situation. David Garrard, Jay Fiedler, Kevin Cobb. So there's a very wide range of people. I don't know where Malik is going to fit in. We got Tyrod Taylor. So we've got guys who have had really good careers and guys who have had so-so careers. DeLome and Hostetler helped lead their teams to a Super Bowl. I don't know where Malik is going to fit in. So this is, you know, the 4 years is a long time to go as a reserve. I don't know what to expect from this guy. Most quarterbacks have beaten somebody out by that time.
I think by the way, speaking for the pessimist on this, if we are to take the other side, is that those guys that you mentioned, like Hostetler, was playing with a championship caliber team. Like, this team is half its cap is dead money. Like, it's going to be extreme. I realize New Hope every year starts at 0-0, but it is going to be so hard to be good.
Yeah.
No matter how good Malik Willis plays. So that's when you sit there and say, it's the same reason why you could justify not bringing Mike McDaniel back. Even if you were pro McDaniel, you're still sitting there saying they're going to lose this year. Right. They're so far behind that you're going to wind up firing him at the end of the year. So I think that that's sort of the question that people will have with the Malik Willis signing is, even if he plays like decent, is he really going to look good enough based on what's around him to be able to elevate his value and his standing with the team? I think that's a great unknown right now.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you brought up Mike McDaniel. I mean, obviously, well, number one, he was Miami Dolphins head coach here, but you were close to a certain degree with Mike McDaniel. And you were recently on the radio with two of our buddies in Joe Rose and Kim Bocamper. And you talked a lot about the McDaniel situation. You talked about, you know, kind of what went right and maybe what Mike McDaniel wishes could have gone differently, or if he had to do it all over again, what he would have done differently. And you also had some interesting things to say in analyzing the Tua-McDaniel relationship. And that, you know, I was, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but I was certainly interested to hear what you had to say there. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because we've said the same thing, like, I disagree with a lot of the decisions Mike McDaniel made and kind of that, you know, you can't treat an NFL locker room like it's a Silicon Valley, big open, cool working space and with a ping pong table in the middle and everybody, you know, I just don't think that works in an NFL locker room, and he tried it and I think people let him down, but at some point he should have realized that it wasn't going to work. But man, oh man, if anybody should have been kissing his ass, it was Tua Tagovailoa, and you seem to indicate that perhaps he kind of turned on him at the end there.
Well, you know, whether he turned on him because he lost faith in Mike, whatever the reason, it felt to me, based on everything that I know, that I have trouble coming to grips with the idea of a player who ultimately was put in the position to succeed, had his career. I mean, to the degree that was the narrative of Tua Tagovailoa, he essentially got paid because of the situation that Mike McDaniel put him in.
Yeah.
And for me, we saw McDaniel put him to elevate him to reach his fullest potential. Now, I understand if you're a player, you're not necessarily going to say, he's the reason I reached my fullest potential. You're going to say, I'm the reason
always
I reached my fullest potential. I got that. But if there was ever an example where basically everyone on the planet would fight back against that, it's this one.
Yeah.
I mean, from everything that he went through with Brian Flores and the way McDaniel built him up, only to have toward the end, very clearly, Tua sort of, I don't want to say turning on him, but certainly not endorsing him or believing in him. That to me felt like, however you felt about Mike, that just rubbed me the wrong way toward the end of the relationship and the end of a tenure that included both McDaniel and Tua.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, Tua goes to Atlanta, and who knows what he's got left. You know, I mean, he looked like a guy, he looked like a shot prize fighter, you know, at the end of last season, or you know, we've seen running backs that go from being the prize of the league to just looking like they can't play any longer. Oh, wait a minute. There he is.
Hey,
we were getting worried about
you, man. Big dog. Where are we going tonight?
What's up, Jeff? What up, man?
What do you got going on here? Where are we heading?
You know, I'm down at F1 right now doing my thing. You know, Dallas Stadium, lot of really rich people like Jeff Darlington and Chris Perkins down here.
I think he called that better dealing. You did a better deal on us, is what you did.
Yeah, it was good, bud.
But I'm gonna tell you what though, it ain't about me right now, man. It's about somebody else, man. So I'm gonna pass this over to somebody else real quick.
Somebody else is in the group. Whoa!
Who is that? DT? Is that Zach?
Is that
hey,
the
that
dude?
Is me. That's right, Jeff.
Wow. Zach, what's up, dude?
I'm sitting in a dark parking lot with OJ, man. And here at the Hard Rock, it kind of looks kind of weird.
Yeah, it's a little strange.
There's no kind of about it, Zach. There's no.
This is not the best start to the Where Are They Now segment.
I miss seeing you guys, hearing you guys. We just got through stealing with an event here and just a meet and greet. And then we played a flag football game, and we started it off with two pick sixes, right?
Yeah, we were terrible at the beginning.
But we came back and won that game.
Hey, how about this? Zach kicked a field goal to win it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
It was only 3 yards. The field goal was only 3 yards, but it was good.
Hey, the more you can do.
Winners win.
I pulled my hamstring and he threw his shoulder out. So it's like.
So Zach, now I'm glad that the two of you guys are here because Jeff had a question about the Blue Martini Bar. And we. You know,
No, actually, I think Zach used to hit that up too back then. The only reason I even brought that up, OJ, was because they said that I was over the beach place back when I was covering the team, which is bullshit.
Right.
We both know.
Right.
Remember, I mean, Blue Martini had a little run there for a minute. I would see.
OJ. They sure did, man.
You remember
they
things?
Definitely had a run.
That question's for this guy.
Zach just ran out of the car.
Dude, Zach, hey, Zach's an elbow room guy. Zach's an elbow room guy. So, yeah.
That's not too bad either.
But Blue Martini definitely had a hell of a run, man. It was, all of Fort Lauderdale before we, you know, when we didn't have to go to South Beach was incredible.
That's right. Those were the days.
Like now you don't have to go anywhere, right, Jeff?
Yeah, Zach wasn't doing that stuff though, man. He was, you know.
He was dialed in, man. Example. Getting three square meals at the facility.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Going home, he was never out and about.
He was the guy who hired. So I'll never forget this. Now everybody in the NFL has it. It was a big story when people were like, Zach Thomas has someone at his house who stretches him.
Right.
He had someone stretching him. Everybody's like, whoa, next level now. Yeah. Like,
well, how about the hyperbaric chamber? The Michael Jackson chamber up there too.
Hey Zach, how much did you pay for that hyperbaric chamber back then?
You know, back then I think it was I think I paid about $6,000, and then I sold it to Channing Crump for $10,000. And he gave me cash for it. I said, "Give me a check, man. You can write it off." He's like, "Nah, here, take this stash."
That's awesome.
Oh my God.
But yeah, the recovery part of it was all part of my game. But listen, let's don't exaggerate. Seth knows me. You know, I was out just in the all off season. I was out all the time, and we were some fools. And I got smarter as the years went on. I knew my body couldn't take going out late. But man, that was in my later years, man, and get a little smarter with the game.
I feel you, man. I'm not even trying to play football, and I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I learned that lesson too late, but, you know.
Have you learned it, Perk?
I don't know if Perk has learned it, man. Don't let Perk fool you, man.
Oh, too good.
Yeah. Zach was the first person in his business who knew my name. I remember walking in the locker room, I walked through the locker room, and he was such a superstar in the NFL. And I walked through, and he looks over at me and goes, "Hey, Jeff." And I walked out of there like, holy shit. First of all, the fact that anybody knew my name, but that Zach Thomas knew my name.
Is now the right time for us to tell him that I had to tell you that 2 minutes before you?
That's not true, man. He is, you know what?
Hey, look, I'll tell you this. Zach is one of the last players that I covered in that Southwest Conference, man, when I covered Texas, and he was at Texas Tech.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Daryl Gardner was a Southwest Conference guy, but yeah, that's how far I went back.
Damn.
Yeah, that's going way back, man. That's way back.
Way back.
Yeah.
I know.
Hey, when I met Zach, I didn't like his ass at all, y'all. I'm going to tell you that because He tried to beat us. He was at Texas Tech. He tried to beat Penn State all by himself. He had like 2012. He had like 25 tackles and shit, man.
Well, yeah, the reason I had that many tackles, we were on the field too long.
Hey, you know what, though? I'll bet Perk's experience covering Zach in college was a little different than my experience covering Channing Crowder in college.
Oh,
I bet. Oh, I had to show up, yeah. I had to show up at the courthouse every other week. The police report said, the police report said that Channing Crowder was accused of permanently disfiguring the victim's face.
Oh, Jesus my Christ.
I went into the courtroom and he's in there testifying and they put him up there to ask him about the situation. And he's like, I don't know. I was too drunk to know what was going on. Like, that was literally on the record.
And that, man. Hey, you know how them Gators roll, Big Seth. That's how them Gators roll, man.
That's right. He came to a couple parties with me in my fraternity house, and I had to get him out of there so damn fast.
I bet. Well, I won't tell you about Zach in Gainesville either, though, so we won't get into that.
Oh, that was great. That's good times right there. Yeah. Let me tell you, man, I got to say something about Seth. You know, on paper, we're total opposites, man. And since the beginning, we always hanging out. And, you know, he made me more open-minded. I made him more closed-minded. You know, it's like, it's that type of relationship. But that relationship has been so great, man. Yeah, man. And I'm just saying that, man, not because I'm here. And, dude, I'm 9:30 at night with OJ in a dark parking lot.
Doing a drug deal.
Talking love to Seth Leonard. I really appreciate that friendship we got, man. But, hey. That's the only reason I'm saying that, so you don't tell those stories in Gainesville. That was,
he jumped in quick. I like that little bit.
That wasn't me. I just remember I was going about 110 all the way to Gainesville, and then you switched seats with me, and we were going about 75, and he gets a ticket.
That's insane.
He was so mad the whole rest of the trip. Seth,
it's an absolute truth, Jeff. We got all the way up there past 75. We're like three exits out. And he says, Seth, why don't you just get us in? You know the area better. And I don't know if you had that radar or what was going on, but I might have been behind the wheel for 6 minutes and I get pulled over for going about 6 miles over the speed limit.
Hey, try too hard to follow the rules, and that's what happens.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, Jeff.
You need the good day young, brother.
You are exactly right. Well, what the hell? Like, should you guys be in an appearance right now? What are you guys doing?
Yeah, we dipped out on the ass, man. We took their money and we dipped.
But is that, like, are you in his Uber ride? Like, did you call a Lyft? Like, what's going on?
Nah, we parked a few spots over, man. Zach's like a couple spots over, man. I said, man, jump in the ride with me, dog. Let's roll, man. We're going to talk to these cats real quick.
That's unbelievable. Awesome. Unbelievable.
I should be having my chamomile tea right now, man. What the hell?
What we signed up for. Well, we were just talking about the Dolphins' decisions at quarterback. That's as far as we got, and the way things ended here in Miami. Jeff, is there a more unlikely pairing than Jim Harbaugh and Mike McDaniel?
There's not a quirkier pairing. I mean, that's for sure. It surprised me a little bit because I really thought. You know, the Bucs really wanted Mike, and he would have been able to take over the offense there and probably kind of turn that into a head coaching job if things went well. You know, Mike decided that he liked what Harbaugh was doing so much that he was okay not being the number one offense guy and believes that Harbaugh will give him enough freedom. It was an interesting decision. But damn, dude, that is some quirky meeting rooms right there. I mean, that's the only word I can think of for that.
Yeah. Stranger pairing, those two or Zach and OJ sitting in the parking lot.
Yes. But I'm gonna let Zach go right here. But you know, I'm a defensive player at heart, Big Seth. You know what I mean? That's how we roll.
I do. Zach, many times did OJ kick us out of the basketball court and shut the lights off on it?
Man. Quite a few times.
You ever notice how you never hear defensive players say, I'm an offensive player?
I'm an offensive player. That's a great point.
They want to be the dog. Like, you don't just get to
That's
do
a
that,
great right, point, Jeff. That's a great point.
Actually, I do. You know when you hear it? like that fake punt in Houston. Then all of a sudden, Zach and Izzo start pulling out tapes from their high school. You know, I get the tape, and he tells me how many yards he ran for. So that's the only time.
I remember those VHS tapes, hell, man. Yeah. Those are great.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Too good.
Dude, well, Zach,
that
good
Texas
team,
football was the best. Yeah, man. And, and hey, he used to let those dogs out, those, right, Seth? When the dogs came out, man, I was gone. I was jumping over his wall.
Lock the gate, let the dogs out, and turn the lights off. Something about that's not right.
I was not that cruel. Man. I'm going to tell you this, though. Zach also came over to my house and jumped the wall when I was sitting outside, scared the shit out of me.
No, I would.
He rolled up on me. I'm like, whoa, shit.
When I was driving home after, you know, eating and dinner or something at a restaurant, and I see all these cars at his house, so I knew he's doing a party. So I'd go, and then I would sneak over the back wall and just join the party. I'm like, what the hell? You weren't even invited. Yes, sir. What's up, dude?
Always invited.
Jeff and Perk, these guys live six houses away from each other. Can you imagine those two guys when they were single and playing for the Miami Dolphins, living six houses away?
Nope.
Oh, man.
I picked the wrong team to cover.
Yeah. Patrol probably knew that, right?
Hey, Chris, he had Fat Joe on his street, and he also had Kajana right next to him, Kajana Carter. So,
Kajana Carter, party every Fat weekend. Joe, Zach.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds like the start of a great anecdote, right?
It was a 24-hour block party. A 24-hour block party. Kind of like Fish Tank Live, I guess. Is what it
That's right. Like. That's right. The party never stops. So, all right, I'm going to let Zach get out of here, man. He's got to get home to the family, y'all.
Hey, see you, Zach.
All right, yeah.
Yes, sir. Good to see you.
All right,
Zach, good to see you,
Jeff.
Man.
I was going to call you John to be funny about the whole name thing, but I'll see you, John. and Chris, I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, Zach.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
All right, guys. Love you, guys.
Love you, boy.
Too good. Too good. So, I need to gather myself on this one.
That was shit together, Big Seth.
No doubt. Well, I mean, you threw a curveball. We had the whole chat working for you. And
who's the next guest, OJ?
Right. That's it. It's just me and Zach, man. It's just me and my dog.
Yeah.
That could be a hell of a segment. So what do we have? I mean, you talked about the dead cap money, Jeff. And what do the Dolphins do from here? Because, I mean, you're at a point where, like, you can't find enough money to keep Julian Hill. You know, like, I mean, that's where things are right now.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, that's true. That is where things are. Where you have to look for the only example you can in this is what the Denver Broncos did when they got rid of Russ. And Sean Payton was dead set on changing a culture, and that happened quick. Now, that was the result of drafting a quarterback in Bo Nix, but it didn't happen right away. I mean, it was a quick transition, but that's where you kind of have to either if you're not confident you're going to get that quarterback in this coming draft, which it feels like next year would be the better year. I understand the idea of taking that gamble on Malik to at least put yourself somewhat out there.
Yeah.
But no, this is a unprecedented. I mean, this is not a normal situation that the Dolphins have put themselves in, which is why it was always so kind of easy to argue against the idea of paying two of that contract when they did. There was always a chance to continue to evaluate him with that fifth year that they didn't take. Now they're in this situation. And unlike any team before them, even the Denver Broncos, who had less dead cap money than this one, they're going to have to take their medicine, and it's going to be a rough go.
Yeah. And it seems like they kind of, I mean, it's what they've signed up for. Like they are this group, you know,
exactly right.
Sullivan and Halfley, they kind of knew that was the case, and let's just rip the Band-Aid off and get through it.
And they're the type of guys too, by the way, from the demeanor that I've seen from them so far, that are those sort of type of professionals who I think that they have the type of emotional stability to be able to navigate this in a way that we'll see whether it amounts to eventual wins. But in the short term, you've got to have sort of a special disposition between your head coach and your general manager to navigate what are going to be some pretty ugly waters. So at the very least, I'm not saying that these guys are destined for the Hall of Fame no matter what, you know, but I can at least say they have the demeanor to handle what feels like a really tough spot to be in.
That makes a lot of sense. And Perk, I know you wrote during the combine, like they kind of passed the first test, you know, where we saw the first thing that we saw about those guys. But what I want, especially now that we just saw Zach and OJ together, I want to know, let's get reflective here. And Jeff covered this team, you know, back when these guys were playing. Yeah. When you say this was the most disappointing era in Miami Dolphins history, the Tua era, can you expand upon that? Because I want to get some perspective from some other guys who've been around a few different eras of this franchise.
Yeah, yeah. And look, and it's not the Tua era. It's the Greer Tua McDaniel era, or yeah, Greer Tua McDaniel Tyreek era. I brought this up before, but I brought it up this time because this is when they announced that they had told Tua about his release. But the operative phrase there is based on talent and expectations. I'm not saying that this was the worst era of Dolphins football. Right. It was the most disappointing. You look at all the names they had, from Mike McDaniel, Vic Fangio, Calais Campbell, Tyreek Hill, Tua, Jalen Waddle, Jalen Ramsey, Calais. I mean, you had Hall of Famers. You gave up resources, first round picks to get these guys. You gave big contracts. You gave contract extensions, and you didn't even win a freaking playoff game. That is disappointing. I'm not saying that these guys are losers. I don't believe that they are. I'm not saying that these guys are failures. I don't believe that they are. But that era was a failure, and that era was the most disappointing era of Dolphins history to me.
I've been thinking. What are your thoughts, Jeff, OJ?
No, I was just going to kind of piggyback on that from the standpoint that it's mostly disappointing because they showed the potential of being the best offense in the NFL.
Like, to me,
I mean, that's the jarring part of it, is that there was this experiment that it was like, you know, this happened on a lesser scale with the Atlanta Falcons when they had a really good thing going with Thomas Dimitroff, and everybody thought they were going to be this really good team, and they realized that they were too much of a finesse team. And they tried to suddenly transition to becoming a tougher, bigger team. And it's like, if that's not a light switch you can just flip. And I think that sort of happened in Miami, where they started to recognize, like, we built this team for speed, and they can do that in September in Miami. But it's a lot more difficult to be a timing-oriented offense in January in Kansas City. And I think that's where I come from, the standpoint that, like, I'm never going to crush Mike too much because he was so innovative, and just it didn't work to be that type of postseason team. And I think that to Perk's point, to me, that's why I do agree. That is the most disappointing thing, to see so much potential, have so much fun watching them put up 70 on the Broncos, and ultimately see so little in terms of ultimate results.
But you know what, Jeff? I'll say this, that, you know, I think that Mike's offense got figured out in 2023. And I always say that, to me, the 2-week span that best epitomizes that era was when they beat Denver here 70-20 without Jalen Waddle, mind you. He was out with a concussion. Waddle comes back the next week. They go to Buffalo and get smoked 48-20. And it illustrates how they could pound bad teams and get pounded by good teams. And in 2023, they know this, these numbers. I say them all the time. The Dolphins the Dolphins were 1-6 against playoff teams, and they got outscored in those seven games by an average score of 32-16. That offense, 16 points against playoff teams in a seven-game sample size, and it got worse in 2024 and then worse in 2025 without Tyreek. But
Perk, that's where you bring up, you know, before you mention it, you know, it's not just Tua, it's not just Mike, it's not just it, like, that's where all of a sudden things just went awry too, because I do believe that Mike is capable of evolving. He was a more run-centric offensive mind when he was with Kyle with the 49ers. And then he found this love for speed and did that in Miami. Like, I think that he, even if they figured him out, would have been capable of evolving. But I would point toward Chris Greer. And this is not to exonerate Mike. I'm just saying that I would point toward Chris Greer for what became roster building and draft picks that did not work out. And then I would point toward the way that Tua was playing and really the offense that was minimized by potentially the injuries that were curtailing his career. So I think that it became this amazing moment, flash and pan moment, where you did have all those weapons. It did look like so much potential. And then all of a sudden, like a lot of things in the NFL, it starts to just snowball in the wrong direction. And they just could not stop that snowball. And that's the reason why, you know, I think Mike could still be a really good coach. I really do. I think that he could develop into becoming a good head coach. But that's also the reason why I understand why ownership decided to move on from him. Because at this point, it just felt like there is no way you were stopping that snowball. If not right now, by the end of next year, the failure was inevitable based on what had occurred in the past year or two.
You know, I'll say this. In doing a blame game thing, which it's not the fault of any one person, I do say that Mike McDaniel is more at fault than anybody of those.
Oh, I totally disagree. Here's
why I'll say that, Jeff, because Chris Greer got you the best talent that you had in 20 years. Tua was the best quarterback that you had since Dan Marino. So coach him up. Like
he did. He made him the number one quarterback in the NFL.
Yes. But Jeff,
statistically, he did.
He had him throw to Tyreek, which is smart on Mike's part. I don't know. I think a whole lot of that. See, the other thing I said was that offense was based on two things: Tyreek Hill and the threat of Tyreek Hill. If they'd have had the 2025 run game in 2023, they'd have been a much better team. And let me say this also, I'm not putting this all on the offense, because as I said, in 2023, average score is 32-16. What the hell are you doing allowing 32 points per game? So I would have wanted them to build a complete team like San Francisco and Philly. So
you mean like Chris Greer's job?
Well, that is Chris Greer's job, but Mike McDaniel had more control, had more say-so. It was Mike McDaniel's vision, which I do fault Chris Greer for that. You're the GM, but it was every coach's vision that Chris Greer didn't have a vision. He did whatever the head coach wanted.
Juice, did you want to say something? Because I have some thoughts here too, and I wanted to sit there.
Well, yeah, I think it's not all about Mike's ability to call plays and run an offense. I think Mike's downfall is loss of the locker room. You know,
I agree.
Mike lost the locker room, bro, and I think he let them try to run the asylum and they ran over him, and that was a big problem.
I agree. But I also think that that's where, if you're going to, like, I'll go back to saying, you know, blame across the board, but to say that Mike was more at fault than Greer or Tua, like, I can't go there. And that's not just, you know, I just think that I agree with you, but you're also, as a general manager, it's your job, literally, the title of your job is general manager. It is your job to manage that locker room and to manage that roster. And I do think that what I would
never
say,
Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff, I've never seen the GM in that locker room. It should be the players' locker room. The problem with the Dolphins was they had the wrong guys as their leaders of that locker room because they weren't the best examples for all the guys in that locker room.
Right.
You know, I get what you're saying, but the fact that some of the guys that were the captains and the leaders were the dudes that weren't showing up or coming in late, doing the hell they wanted to do, and that's just bad leadership. That was I guess it was voted on by the squad. Now, Chris's job, honestly, is to go out and get talent. And we had some talent, but at the same time, though, the leaders in that locker room were not the best leaders
That's also where I disagree. The job of the general manager is not just to go assemble talent. It's to assemble the right guys and the right fit for a locker room. Like, going and just picking up the best players around the league and saying, go, you deal with it. You deal with Jalen Ramsey and Tyreek Hill. Like, I do agree with you when it came to the leadership component of Mike, but I also think that it's not just the job of a GM isn't just to go out there, poach as much talent and not look at the character of the players that you're also bringing onto the team. Now, to that end, I will say that Mike also was supportive of bringing those guys in. But like, for instance, the idea that Mike is responsible for Tua's contract, to me, it is the job of the head coach to fall in love with his quarterback and vouch for him. It is the job of the general manager to decide whether that's a smart contract for them to give him. And in the case of Tua, it was not. So when we talk about the most massive mistake that the team made in the past 2 years, to me, it was signing Tua to a contract when you had a fifth year to evaluate him before you would have had to pay him exactly what you did ultimately pay him an offseason before.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
I mean, there's so many elements of everything that we're talking about. It's like everybody's a little right. Everybody I could probably push back on.
No, but that's the point, Seth. It's sort of that's kind of what I was getting before. The point I was getting to before is that, like, I think that it ultimately was just by the end, a comedy of errors in terms of this person with this person was not going to work. Like, if you're going to have, and I told this to coaches around the league when they were looking at Mike, if you're going to hire a coach like Mike McDaniel or even Kyle Shanahan or even Sean McVay, those guys to a degree will put they will go into their lair on Tuesday and they won't come out till Wednesday night, like Wednesday at practice. Like, they're the kind of guys who are brainiacs, offensive geniuses that we all love to put on a pedestal. But if you're going to have that, you've got to have a general manager who's not going to go down the hall and lock himself in the office either.
Right.
And that's the thing. That's not placing all the blame on Chris. That's not placing all the blame on Mike. It's showing you that the combination of the two is the key to success in the NFL. And the Dolphins did not have that with the combination of Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I, you know, to me, Chris Greer's biggest failures, first and foremost, is that 2020 draft. And nothing seals that point home more than what just happened, right? Tua Tagovailoa is no longer the quarterback of the Dolphins. He's getting paid $100 million not to be the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. There is one player left on the roster from that draft, and he just had his contract restructured. He just took a pay cut. That's Austin Jackson, and he's missed 35 games in the last 4 years. Like, that's all that's left of a draft that could have become like the Jimmy Johnson draft, where you make your team a contender for a decade.
You can keep going too. 2021, 20. I mean, it's not a great body of work across the board, whether coaching or
it is absolutely not. But then I think Mike McDaniel got here, and Juice, I would almost say he didn't just lose the locker room. I think he gave it away, and it's what you were saying. But he gave it away, and he gave it away to the wrong people, and then he did nothing to stop the bleeding. That is a part of his job.
Any team can't make the leaders the guys that are making the most money or guys that are making plays. Those aren't the guys that, you know. For me, I'm looking for a guy that does things always the right way. They might not be the best player on the team, but they're the mugs that do the things the right way. And so if you don't have the right leadership, I don't care how much money they make or how many plays they make. We've had all that. The money and the plays, they might not be the best leaders in your locker room. But those guys are usually a bad influence to some of the younger guys in your locker room.
That's right.
And they're the ones that sit there and watch these guys do what the hell they want and think that they can do whatever the hell they want, and they're not in that same class. Jimmy Johnson, as much as I don't like that dude, he always always talked about, you know, there's a totem pole, Seth. We already know this in a hierarchy. Certain guys, they're going to have certain privileges, you know, and that's what happened. These certain guys that are making all the money, making the plays, had the privileges, but they were the wrong dudes for some of these young guys to be following.
I totally agree with that. I'll be very curious, by the way, if Mike does get another chance as head coach, if that is a lesson that he takes from it. Because you know what? One of the other interesting things, OJ, when Mike got the job in Miami, there were a bunch of 49er players, and I'm talking like, we're talking stars, Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, Juice, McCaffrey, the other Juice, and those guys were all saying, like, this dude, Mike McDaniel, is such a great leader. And as an offensive coordinator, you could understand where that would come from, given what we saw from him as a head coach. The question is, when he gets his next head coaching job, will he understand that you have to evolve as a leader from being a coordinator or a position coach to being somebody who is overseeing the whole organization. You cannot prioritize top five players over the middle of your roster, or you're going to lose
right.
them all.
Right.
And I think that if I was to say, what is the one lesson that Mike can take away from this experience, there's a lot to be gained in terms of developing as a head coach. But if there is one lesson, you hit the nail on the head. That is 100% what it's going to have to be.
Right.
Yeah, right, you know, one sure, bro. The one thing that I always said about McDaniel locker rooms is great guys, classy guys, but there was no edge. It wasn't like being in your locker room, OJ. It wasn't like being in the Miami Heat locker rooms when I covered them. It wasn't even being like the Philbin locker rooms when you had guys with an edge like Rashad Jones and Mike Pouncey and guys who weren't going to the Hall of Fame.
Richie Incognito?
By the way, that's
part of the crew, but Kirk, just guys with an edge.
Whose job is it to acquire guys with edge?
Well, I think it's the general manager's job. That's his job description. But you take a lot of that from the coach because the coach is with you every day. He helps set a tone of seriousness that bullshit is not going to be tolerated here. And and this is not a rip job on Mike, but it's really not. But the locker room just wasn't as serious. There was always say there's a necessary paranoia
that you need to have in pro sports.
That if I mess up, I could lose my job. And that wasn't the mood in the Daniel era.
Who brings the edge to a locker room? The players or the coach?
Well, the players bring the edge. The coach sets the tone. The coach is the one who says, this is what will be tolerated. This won't. The players carry it out amongst themselves.
Juice, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, you played for Joe Paterno, Don Shula, and Jimmy Johnson. Who that's a great question and answer there by Jeff and Perk. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly feel like, you know, you gotta have some fucking dogs in your locker room, man. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, we talk about this all the time. You want 98% of the guys on your team to, you know, that you want your daughter to marry and that you don't want your daughter to marry, and 2% that you do.
Right.
You know what I mean? But you also have to, within dogs, you got some guys that do the right thing as dogs. Now, we got some dogs. I'm not saying Tyreek's a dog. He can play. He can ball. You know, they're dogs. They can play. But, shit, they don't do the right thing, man. So, if you don't do the right thing and being a dog, then it's a problem. And then, a lot of times now, the money's a problem for these dudes because you can't find them enough. You can't get rid of them when you want to. You can't do a lot of things that, you know, Shula or Jimmy Johnson could threaten you with back in the day. You can't threaten these dudes with that. That don't mean anything. These dudes to write a check at the beginning of the season and say, I won't make any of the meetings all year long, and it won't bother them at all. You know what I mean? Because there's the limit on how much you can find these dudes. And Mike talked about that. Mike talked about finding guys and things like that. But bottom line is this. You got to find you got to find the right dudes that are the ones that can run your locker room.
That's right.
And do the right things. Not necessarily be the best players on your football team, but always doing the right things. Dudes that want to show up and go out there and play, man. And I think that, you know, it's a tough deal for guys that come in now. They don't know anybody personally other than Malik Willis. You know what I mean?
Right.
They don't know anybody else. So their whole thing now is trying to figure out, who are these dogs now? Who do you talk to find out who they are? Where do you go to find out which guys that are in this locker room now?
You have to find them. You got to go draft them. You got to acquire them. If you can't,
but you got to maintain some of these dudes that are there now, though, Jeff.
I agree, but that is the job. Say it with me, Perk, of the general
manager.
In the locker room, if you want dogs in a locker room, the coach doesn't teach the player how to be a bad husband at home.
No, but Jeff,
98% of it comes from the dog.
You can't absolve the coach of all of that responsibility.
I'm not at all.
Because they're picking the kind of guys they want too, right?
Right.
No, I'm not at all absolving him, but I'm just saying that I don't necessarily agree with Perk that Mike McDaniel was most responsible for what happened because he's saying that there wasn't enough edge in the locker room either, which to me, that doesn't fall on the head coach.
I mean,
well I'm going to tell you this, though. I'm going to tell you this real quick, Big Seth, that I mean, Mike McDaniel's in the locker room 100% of the time, and Chris Greer's in the locker room probably 2% of the time. Right. So somebody's controlling that environment, and it wasn't Chris Greer controlling that environment.
Right, and Mike is leading every meeting. He's leading. He's setting the tone as per.
I agree with that.
I understand your point. It's who brings the players in. And it's not only who brings the players in. It's who has the power and the balls to say no if a head coach wants a certain thing. And you made that point as well, right? The coach falls in love with the quarterback and wants That's him right. to get paid because he doesn't want to watch him standing on the sidelines and he can't execute his practice. The GM has to say, hold your water. Like we're not going to be irresponsible here. So I agree with you there. And that was Chris Greer's downfall more than any player procurement. It was his inability to push back at his head coach. And, you know, it happened with Brian Flores. So they just fired Brian Flores. And there's a number of different reasons, but they fired Brian Flores because of that, you know, his inability to kind of manage that. It happened with McDaniel. It happened with probably Adam Gase as well. And so I think that Greer has to be responsible for that. But setting the tone and finding players you want. Look, Alec Ingold, Cole Strange, we're starting to see players from Miami go right to the Chargers. And that's not because the GM just woke up and said, hey, these kind of guys are our fit. It's Mike McDaniel advocating for those guys.
You do, though. That's a good point. You want to find – a lot of times with Kyle, with like Mike was responsible for finding Deebo Samuel because he believed that he could be the type of running back in his offense as opposed to just being a pass catcher.
Right.
To me, that's where you're leaning on the head coach to kind of fit that mold. And that's what I think what spinning it forward with John Eric Sullivan and a head coach who kind of worked together in Green Bay, even though they weren't best friends, you know that synergy sort of exists. And I think that's sort of the downfall of any team. Going back to the idea of like the blame game, honestly, is when you have a partnership of two people that don't ultimately work. And whether it's Mike Vrabel in New England and having more of a cerebral guy who's going to do the talent acquisition, which Mike is extremely smart too, but he's kind of that tone setter.
He set the tone, right.
Right, but then you're going to have a counter to that. Mike and Chris, that is not a good mix. You cannot have a guy who wants to put himself in his office and figure out the game plan when you have a GM down the hall in his office. Like, you have to have the combination, the synergy between the front office and the coach. And if you don't, you have nothing.
I think, like, yeah, there it is. That's a mic drop right there. You have nothing. And that's exactly what we ended up with. And they're rebuilding from nothing. So we've completely broken format, and it has been the greatest format break that we've ever had. So this has been fantastic.
Very fun.
But there's a question right before we wrap this thing up and let you go. And Jeff, by the way, you told me 20 minutes and you gave us a full hour.
Yeah, we got Zach Thomas in here. It's all good.
That's true. It's hard to, that was pretty good. I don't know what the hell was going on in that car, but that was pretty good.
You better, hey, watch yourself, Big Seth. Watch yourself.
Man, OJ's home.
There's nothing going on in that car.
I didn't know OJ got all the way home either. That might be even more remarkable.
I didn't know we could run errands when we were doing this shit.
That was incredible. So Sam asked, and this is a great question, since we're talking about the responsibility of the GM and the responsibility of the head coach, I'm going to make Jeff Darlington the general manager. Chris Perkins is the head coach. Sam Marcoux wants to know, Jeff, which current Miami Dolphins beat writer would you sign to your football team, and what position would they play?
Oh, that's a good one. Let me think this through. I gotta go Shad. I'll go Shad.
Really?
Versatile guy, kind of five tool player.
I think his better years are behind him, to be honest with you. I think you're overpaying a veteran right now, Jeff.
Kirk, where are you going?
I'd have to go with my coworker, my boy David Peronis, man. He's young, he works out, he's in shape. Yeah, he can play offense, defense, got a little attitude to him. Yeah,
is he captain? Because we're in a hell of a cap situation.
I hate to tell you this, man. Every sports writer is cap friendly these days, brother.
Yeah, no joke. Exactly.
That's why Darlington's on TV, I guess, is what it is.
We're all cap friendly.
Man, too good. I don't even want to ruin this perfect moment with anything else. Juice, get us the hell out of here, man.
That was fun, man.
Yo, man. Hey, everybody. Thanks for diving in, everybody. Outstanding stuff.
All right. Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
So good.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans. Number one, of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.